I'm like, this is just like dead fish sex. And welcome everybody to episode 18 of Digesting Cinema with Aaron and Christina. I'm your host, Aaron, and as always, I'm here with my host, Christina. And this week, we are joined by a very special guest. He is a former fan leaguer. Don't let anybody forget it, even though it's not mentioned now since he's so good in the schmodown, like the fan leagues don't exist to this guy. But it's Adam Collins, former singles champion of the world, future singles champion of the world again, joining us for documentary, which we'll get into in a second. How you doing, Adam?
Good, and the fan leagues very much exist. I'll have you know, I co-host on occasion. I am busy outside of the schmodown, but I love the fan leagues. Do need to come back to host a featured presentation, so put in a good word with Tony for me.
Yeah, I'll see. I mean, I hardly get to host over there. It's only like once or twice a week that I get to do something over there now. We are covering episode 18 now of Digesting Cinema. It's every single week I'm kind of blown away. We're getting more and more episodes. We're getting closer to a day of recording together, Christina, which I know makes you feel extra special.
I couldn't be more happy to have known that I've spent a whole day with you talking about movies.
So happy together. But we are covering documentaries this week, and Mr. Collins, seeked out this documentary when we first announced this show. It is Koyan Nisgatsi, which I now know how to say. And people know a little bit about how I go into a film. I like to not know anything about it. I like to avoid any sort of, like, I hardly even like to look at a synopsis. I was able to look at the synopsis. Christina, do you have that synopsis up for us?
No, I want to hear this. I want to hear this.
Yeah, could you give us the synopsis? Which this synopsis might be the most perfect synopsis ever for a show where we have to discuss a film. Go ahead, Christina.
I mean, do you want the real one or would you like my personal opinion?
We'll get to your personal opinion as well, but let's get the real one first because I think the real one is pretty hilarious way to set up getting ready to speak about a documentary.
Okay. So guys, according to IMDb, it is a collection of expertly photographed phenomena with no conventional plot. The footage focuses on nature, humanity, and the relationship between them.
No conventional plot. So Christina's favorite part of the podcast is out for today, where she gets to guide us through. There are no rails this week with Koyan Nisgatsi. The rails do not exist. Before we jump into our experiences with the movie, which a lot of times people roll their eyes with it. There is no other way to describe it other than you experience this movie. And we will discuss our very different experiences with this movie in a moment. But Adam, why?
Why? Well, this is a film that for those who discovered it early, it has a very, very strong following. When it was released in the early 80s, it didn't make a ton at the box office, just around like $3 million. And after that, like it's just started getting, you know, handed around between film buffs, shown at film school, stuff like that. When I was in film school, I discovered the third film in this trilogy because it's a trilogy of documentaries. And that was Nakoikatsi, which we won't get into too much today. But when I saw that, I was intrigued by it, but I found out it was part of a trilogy. So I went back and I found Koyan Nisgatsi at my college library and I fell in love with it. I watched it many times in college and then became obsessed with the second two films as well. But I find it to be an interesting time capsule that also has a very timeless message to it. And I have a lot more to say about it.
Yeah, no, that's a good little cap to the beginning of this conversation. Christina, your initial reaction going into this movie before we even started, how are you feeling going in just based on the little plot? We've, in all honesty, the last couple of weeks, I would not say are Christina movies. The conversation, we had a great conversation about, but you didn't love your experience with that one. Blade Runner, you loved even less. I got a solid 1 out of 5.
You saw Blade Runner.
last week.
I fell asleep during it and then just like kind of fought my way through the rest of it. But I was totally conscious for this movie. Yeah. Documentaries don't bother me. You know, I'm a smart person. I think the no narration, I was expecting it to be narrated, I think. Like, I was kind of, like, when you watch the trailer, you see, like, a lot of parts of the movie and how it's filmed and the time lapse and all that stuff. But I think I expected a little bit more. And the fact that there's zero narration, like, there is no human voices at all. I was like, okay, so this is cool.
There's the chanting, you know.
Yeah, we got the Koyaanisqatsi. To open it and close it. I mean, I know I've never seen a movie like this. I've seen maybe mediums like this, maybe when I've gone to like an IMAX at the Smithsonian. It's reminded me a little bit of this in some ways. But honestly, I did find it to feel pretty similar to like a meditation on our entire world in 86 minutes. And it just, for me, like, it's a movie where the first 20 minutes, I was trying to figure out where it was kind of going. And I thought I had a kind of an idea and I was a little bit concerned. And this was obviously my first watch of it. The first 20 minutes, I was like, oh, this is a little bit one note. And then there's kind of a shift in the movie for me when the human element of the film is brought in more. And I'm just kind of enamored from that point forward. And it really brings up a lot of thoughts that I've been having within quarantine this past year anyways, of kind of my thought, my place and how small I am and things like just things. And it was interesting because I noticed a lot of my reactions throughout the movie. And I mean, this movie really did work for me. I know it didn't work for Christina, and we'll definitely talk about that. And I think that even the filmmaker, Gregory Ruggiero, is that how you say his name?
Godfrey Reggio.
Even says, which at this point, I think his like kind of avant-garde kind of approach has been kind of lampooned and parodied, but he literally says, your reaction is, no one can tell you your reaction. Some people are going to see this movie, think it's utter shit. And they're right. Some people are going to see this movie and find it to be a revelation. Some people are going to find it to be a movie about saving the environment. Some people are going to find it to be a movie about just, I mean, it really is an abstract piece of art. And I don't think there are many, and it is completely a documentary, documenting just everything on this planet. And it, yeah, I was really impressed with the headspace and the challenge it was to stay in that intention in 2021. I just think for a movie in 1982, they didn't have the thought of you're watching this and like put away your phone. Like, I had an urge at a couple points to break my attention. I have ADHD and like things like that, but I didn't. And I found that as a result of working through that, I got a really beneficial viewing experience from this. So that was kind of my initial little takeaway as I left the movie. Christina, how was your experience with this movie?
I did not have a revelation. First of all, I knew I wasn't going to like it, and I knew it probably wasn't going to hold my attention. So my original plan was to watch it in chunks because I wanted, almost like studying, when they say you're supposed to study for 20 minutes, take a break so you can really retain everything. So I was like, all right, this is how I'm going to watch this movie. So I watched the first 30 minutes, totally fine. And then the next I went to it, I was like, you know what? I'm just looking at stuff because the score was like revolting to my ears. So I just almost watched this on mute. And I was like, you know what? I'm just looking at pictures. So I was like, this is on YouTube. I made it go twice as fast and I just knocked it out. So, and I lowered the volume. So that way, I didn't want to like barf because it was so nauseating to listen to this music as I was watching this. So that was my experience as far as just watching it. I did not pick up my phone though. So I did watch the movie and Adam is shaking his head the whole time. So Adam, bring it on.
No, I'm not here to shame you. It bums me out a little bit. I don't know that that's exactly how Reggio intended the film to be seen. That said, I have a different experience when I watch this, and I respect your opinion. but for me, what I think the film does well for the audience with whom it resonates, I think what it does well is it captures a moment that's really specific in the early 80s. And as you're watching it, you can see that, you know, it speaks for itself. And it's not just the 80s. It started filming in the mid 70s. So you actually have a span of time. And then a lot of the footage is archival or found footage. Although I want to say, you know, the vast majority, like more than half, at least, of what was in the film was original footage, like especially all the time-lapse stuff. So what I like about it is, to your point, Aaron, it opens up with all these landscapes and everything, and you see the scope of the world. And for me, as a Kubrick fan, it's hard not to immediately connect with 2001: A Space Odyssey when I'm watching this, because you have all of these like wide landscapes, and then you have this quick cut to some sort of machinery, but it's so zoomed in, you're not sure what you're seeing at first. And then as it goes on, you start to realize it's a rocket about to take off. But then we go back to kind of easing back into looking at the world again. And when it builds up to all the stuff with humans and civilization, that's when I think it makes this interesting pivot where you're looking at all of this stuff. And because we've been staring at the raw earth for so long, and then we start seeing all of not just machinery and stuff, but like the things we see when we're in an airplane, but in rapid succession and in rhythmic succession with that music that I understand why it was annoying for Christina, but I'm a big Philip Glass fan. And the score is aggressive by design, and the editing and score and way it goes together is, you know, obviously meant to drill that rhythm into you. And the way the film finds patterns in the world is what I find so fascinating about it.
Yeah,
that
no,
cool. I did like that part. I did like the part where they were showing you like the microchips and then comparing it to city grids. Mm-hmm. That was cool. And I did like a lot of the time lapse stuff with the traffic.
Christina, are you a Madonna fan?
I mean, she's cool.
A Ray of Light music video stole this imagery, you know. So if you look up that music video, and if you're a fan of that and a few other, you know, just saying.
I got a question for you. You will hear part of the score in which comic book film?
Oh, well, I watched it on mute, so I can't answer that question.
I'm going to say Constantine.
It's a good guess. It's actually in Watchmen. During the Dr. Manhattan origin scene. Snyder's a fan of these films as well. Obviously, he likes to mess with time lapse and slow motion and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. No, this is, I much prefer this to the Snyder Cut Justice League. I will say Koyan Minskotsky and how it uses its time lapse is much better.
I'm going to side with you on that argument.
Yeah, hot take. You mentioned airplanes and like how we view city. I definitely had that feeling at multiple times in this movie where like I've looked out an airplane window before as like I've gone over a city and just realized how it looks like Sim City, and it's just there's so much just the same blocks over and over again. And yeah, I mean that the feelings this movie gave me with that, and some of the stuff that I didn't have reactions to, I noticed like kind of me thinking about why I didn't have a reaction and how that is telling how certain things I was like, oh yeah, well, like when they showed the packaging of the meat and then people in like corporate America, I was like, yeah, they're like, we just take that for granted at this point that it's just like, yep, it's just part of the process. And like, of course it is. Like we don't even have a reaction to it.
A lot of what this film is saying would be seen as disingenuous now. Mm-hmm. So like it had to be of its time for something like that hard cut from the hot dogs to the people on the escalators, which I find quite funny. Nowadays, that would be too cute, you know?
Yeah, like, it'd be so eye-rolling, like edgelord almost. Like this movie would be like viewed through that lens, but at the time.
Very clever for the time.
I really thought that a few times, I really enjoyed the last third of the movie significantly. Also, when it kind of returned back to that raw earth footage, because mm-hmm. it just made me realize we just so think that humans are required for this planet like to exist. And without humans, this planet doesn't exist. And like, I'm like, wait a minute, like this planet like very much exists in like the way it probably should. It made me feel guilty for being a human for sure. And like, it does make it feel like we're kind of like the mold on the bread of the earth. Like, and it's just like, I get that Reggio wasn't completely trying to like damn humans and like civilization, but that was like kind of my take from it. It's like, we just like destroy by nature and manipulate to make it work for us. But the way the earth truly can work is like, I feel where it's truly at its homeostasis and peace is at the beginning and end of the movie when the people are not a part of it. So like the middle is like hectic and stresses me out when the people show up.
Well, let's look at what the earth did when we were in a pandemic and we all stayed inside for a while. When you read about so many things, you know, the waters in Venice were clearing up and animals were coming out, and us not being around, the earth tends to heal itself.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I think it's hard not to have that takeaway when you watch this, you know, especially if paying attention to the world we live in. I think that's why it holds up so well. I do think it has just enough of a tinge of optimism to it. And I think that's why it is bookended the way it is. You know, it shows the futility of us trying to get take over outer space there at the end with that footage, which I looked into and I could be wrong, but I do think that's footage from an unmanned flight.
Okay.
The exploding rocket.
I did look this up. There were two rockets. One was from the Apollo 11 and the other one was from like back in the 60s.
Yeah.
So and it was one of their first experimental flights.
Yeah. And I don't think anyone was on it.
I don't think there was either.
Yeah. Because I was like, I'd be surprised if Reggio was like exploiting this footage of. Yeah, because I knew the Challenger hadn't happened yet. And so I was like, what is this? So anyway, I just think it really puts a lot of things into perspective without telling you, hey, think this, you know. That's the beauty of editing. That's why I like, even though it can be frustrating to Christina's point, that's why I like the choice of no narration for this specific film.
I found the film much more enjoyable to watch it without sound, to be honest, than you're literally only just focusing on the imagery. I found the score to be totally annoying and kind of taking me out of it. So to just focus, you know, it's like you're removing all of your senses and you're just focusing in on the one. One thing that I took from this is like, you know, you get the whole hustle and bustle of everything. There's a lot of times where they show you people and I'm pretty confident there was only one person they showed that actually smiled. Everybody else just didn't look happy. And I think there was literally only one woman who was walking in the street with a beaming smile, but everybody else was either their face was they looked sad, they looked angry, or they just had no emotion on their face.
They were all watching Koi Anaskatsi on YouTube, Christina. That's
probably
right. And yeah. 2x speed.
I'm always smiling.
On mute.
I
can't help it.
I feel like that needs to be the next Digesting Cinema shirt is Koi Anaskatsi on 2x on mute. Like this guy, it's just like that's how you digest
it. I knew what I need to do to finish.
The thing is though, when she said that, I was imagining the score like in Chipmunks mode. So like I imagine like Koi Anaskatsi.
That's what it would sound like if I had the sound on, I guess.
Yeah. It's totally fair, Christina. I get it. This is I think that you're not alone in your reaction to that. I think a lot of people feel this movie is absolute crap and other people just feel this movie is absolutely, you know, kind of the truth and art, and then other people kind of are somewhere in the middle.
I think what's interesting about this is it proves that nonfiction doesn't have to be sterile. So like one of the many reasons I love Werner Herzog's films is because his nonfiction in particular is some of his most experimental stuff. His narrative films are actually much more linear, easy to follow. His nonfiction stuff is very open-ended, rhetorical, and contemplative overall, because what he does is he likes to focus on the earth or a part of it and open it up to the world. Like he shows things that we don't pay attention to or things that we don't spend much time thinking about, if at all. And I was already getting into a lot of his films around the time I discovered the Koi Anaskatsi trilogy. And so when I saw this, you know, it was really just like trading in like that poetic narration that I love from his films for the most aggressive Philip Glass score ever created, which for me, I love because I love a lot of Philip Glass's music. Candyman is one of my favorite scores from a horror film. Have you seen Candyman, Christina?
No. Is that a scary movie?
Yeah, you got to see Candyman because the remake's coming out. You know, it's a good time for you to see it. It's a very relevant movie.
I mean, I don't really enjoy being scared, so I'll think about it.
Okay. Well, Philip Glass does the score, so you might have to watch it on mute.
Okay. That's fine. I can totally do that.
But yeah, I just like the idea of a nonfiction film being able to effectively be visual poetry and not just a series of interviews and facts and things like that, which have their place, obviously.
Yeah, definitely. There's no movie, you know, quite like this that I've seen, like I said, and I did appreciate the trust that Reggio puts into the viewer. And I think that it's a movie that everybody should honestly experience and see also, you know, as challenging as it is, because this is relevant to everybody. You know, it's like, it's truly a documentary about life and the balance of life and how it's been thrown out of in our place in it. And it's like, either you've had these thoughts on your own and contemplated it, or you should have these thoughts and contemplate it. And then the reaction you have from there, you can't control that. But, you know, it truly feels like a meditation. And I've heard that misused and like, not in fiction movies before, but I think truly with this, it feels that way. And you're brought into it with the chanting and you're exited with the chanting. Also, it's as if you were in a yoga class of some sort. And my mom's a yoga teacher. So maybe I was more comfortable entering that mind state. I'm not sure.
And I meant to bring that up earlier. The name is very significant. So it comes from the Hopi language. I double checked that because I didn't want to get that wrong. But I knew it was derived from a Native American language. So Koyaanisqatsi translates roughly to life out of balance, which obviously the film, I think, achieves that message. I think even Christina would agree with that.
I do.
or life in chaos is another loose translation of it. And just to kind of give a snapshot, the follow-up, Pauakatsi, I believe, means life in transformation or life in transition. Mm-hmm. And then Nakoikatsi, a little bit more dour, life as war is what that means. So that one's a little more bleak. If you thought this one was kind of a reality check, Nakoikatsi was like, the internet exists now. Ah. So that one gets really, that one gets really freaked out. Yeah.
Well, the third one was 2002, I think. So there's a 20-year difference between the first one and the third one. See, Aaron, I researched stuff for this because I wanted to be prepared.
Now here's the thing. It's not outside the realm of possibility that Koyaanisqatsi could come up in the Schmodown. It's a long shot. But because Coppola produced it, it could come up on his slice.
You're welcome.
Just saying.
You're welcome.
Well, I can't even pronounce it, so it better not come up because I'm going to be like, hey, you guys listen to my podcast, Adam Collins and I talked about this. Please give me my point.
I want episode 18 of the Digesting Cinema. That's your answer.
Yes, you could point to that. Or maybe JT will be your opponent because I want to hear him. I want to see him write that one down.
Oh, my God. He would just be like Kyle Kuzma now or something. Like, I don't know.
But it's a mouthful.
Yeah. Back to the people. One thing that I found very interesting, definitely the lack of expression in everybody just basically going through the motions. Two things. For one, there's a few times where I felt like the people shown were like looking at us as the observer. It felt like
how they were being like, there were times where I felt like the filming, I don't know if you can answer this question. It was almost like they were in front of a background. And then there was other, like, especially in the very beginning, like the people that were walking backward that were in the foreground looked like they weren't in the same place as what was happening in the background. Like it was filmed separately and then merged together.
Are you talking about some of the close-ups?
Yeah, I think in the very beginning, like people are walking backwards and it just doesn't seem like they're really there in the area that they're being shown.
Are you sure you weren't just watching Tenet?
Did you turn on Tenet for a minute?
That freaking movie. Okay, I think I know what you mean. A lot of the stuff in the background, I mean, I know there were a lot of the close-ups where they held on these people and did some time-lapse stuff with what was happening in the background. So that's the background is zipping by while they stay and like we're zooming in. Some of those shots are really breathtaking. The background stuff, I'm not sure. I mean, they do some really interesting forced perspective in this when they're filming a lot of like the streets and the way the streets dip up and down and things like that. Like it messed with my perspective anyway when I was watching these people like move just constantly.
Well, yeah, maybe that's just what it was. It just didn't seem like they were really like on the streets of like if the streets of Manhattan, like some people looked like they were really there and other people were like, it looked like they were in front of like a background almost.
Yeah. I think that's kind of just an effect the film has in a way.
Yeah.
Yeah. And sometimes it like looked like they were almost like ghosts or like spirits like trailing behind them. Like as they were moving around, it was just like kind of how people are like shells of themselves, I think, out in society so often. It was just like visually being put right out there. Mm-hmm. And I think that it's been an interesting conversation. I almost don't want to delve into every single aspect of it and take away the magic of your experience and our thoughts on it, because it's just like when you put it into words, and this is interesting because this is where Reggio, I listened to an interview with him when he was talking about and why he didn't want words. He felt that our language doesn't do justice to the world we live in anymore, and that there's a veil of shame under our language that doesn't allow it to describe the world that we live in today. So I just thought it's kind of ironic that we're trying to use that language now to put words and understand it still 40 years later here, which I always like to point out how long ago the movie was from, but this is from 40, 45 years ago when they started producing this movie. And it's pretty accurate. It's still a documentary. There's not fictional aspects of this. This isn't science fiction. This is our world. We are bringing our own lens into how we're digesting, you could say, the information being presented to us, and our judgments being added to what's being presented by in this movie is our own feelings from 2021 being kind of lensed and funneled into this movie, at least mine, for my first viewing. So it's like, I think it's a pretty amazing piece of documentary, and one that I just would never have thought about as a documentary. Just from the description, I would have been like, oh, that's like a art piece. That's, I know it's all real, but that's not but it truly is every sense definition. Documentary.
Absolutely. And I've never even seen a digital projection in a theater, which I would be happy. I take that as a consolation prize, but I want to see a film print of this someday, and the sequels as well. But this first one especially is my favorite. And I just think, you know, even if you don't have like a positive reaction to it, I would like to think Christina would agree that, you know, when you watch this, what's undeniable is the scope of it and how you can't help but walk away and have this great sense of perspective without feeling like you were lectured to, because it's just footage.
Right.
You know?
Exactly. And I feel like with a lot of documentaries, because people are talking in any genre, you assume they're giving you as many facts as possible, but there's always an agenda. It's like they want you to come out of the movie thinking one way. And this, you can have any interpretation that you want from this movie. And there's no shame. There's no judgment. It is, again, it's a piece of abstract art that Aaron said, and you interpret it however you want to.
Yeah, exactly. And I just think that some people jump the gun on judging movies like this, and they think that the filmmaker, by them saying they don't have an agenda, it's like the ultimate way of them saying they do have an agenda. It's just like, I have listened to a few people who've been critics of this movie, and it's like, I feel like what is being critiqued is like a introspection on the world, and just think that's a weird thing to critique at any point, but especially now more than ever, I feel like people should be being more thoughtful on their impact and on how insignificant we all are, and how that's, you know, that is, it's not like bad or good, it is like, and it's just like weird. It's like there are billions and billions of people all on this earth. The way it was able to capture the enormity of life, I feel, is just like really extraordinary, I guess would be the word. I don't really know how to put it into words exactly, but yeah. And I just think the decision not to have a narrative, there's a sense of relief when the chanting came back for me. And I heard words like, it was like, oh, I thought you like were like getting, like, I was appreciating the experience, but I was like ready for it to be over also. And it was only 86 minutes, because it is like, especially if you watch it all in one setting, like a point where it is overwhelming. And that is, I think, like life, there's points where life gets overwhelming. We have to, and like when I hear the chanting at the end again, I was like, oh my God, words, people speaking, or like just the language, the comfort of language is back.
It makes you think you're like, the film feels, a lot of times parts of it feel like I'm watching another planet.
Yeah.
Even though it's all very familiar, it makes you start to see your own species as an alien race in a lot of ways, at least when I watch it. Now, again, I don't want to get too tangential about the sequels, but I got to say, just got to plug, you know, Tubi, great free streaming service, has the first two of these, you know, with little commercial breaks, minor concession to make to see these. Obviously, you can watch both of them on YouTube as well, but I guess, you know, technically high def on YouTube. On Tubi, I don't know. But the third one's a little bit harder to find. You have to pay to watch it. But the second one is really about, it's a little more optimistic, and it's looking at people all around the world and really focusing on different cultures. And you start to draw your own conclusions about the similarities, you know, that you see across the world. It's, that one's got more warmth to it, but it's really kind of just a buffer between that and the really cynical third chapter.
I'm going to definitely be checking out the rest of this trilogy and letting Christina know as I go through the rest of them, because I think she's gonna be sticking with the one.
Can we do a Kotze trilogy exhibition match and featured presentation? I can't play, but I can write the questions.
Yeah, I just have to find someone who would take me on in that. I would love
to. I think Jake Marangoni likes
Kotze. I would be honored about it.
Okay.
I'd be honored to lose to Jake Marangoni.
Ask him about it.
I would love to do that, and we will get on that. I'm going to give Christina the sweet relief of wrapping up kind of our final little thoughts on Koyaanisqatsi and Scotty.
They're a great double feature, honestly.
Yeah, like in both 1982, correct?
Yeah, 83 in certain territories for Koyaanisqatsi, but 82 is like,
connect our movies. So like we have Gene Hackman, Harrison Ford, 1982. You know, we're just going to keep going.
And good news, no women were hit in this movie, Christina.
Yes, which is also
we broke our streak of domestic abuse, which is like more than half a movie we've chosen a woman that's gotten hit.
Did you work Purple Rain in there somewhere?
Not yet, but I would love to have Tony on for Purple Rain. Yes. It would be like Christina with Klingon Niskatsky.
I think I've been a delight for this.
No, you really have.
You've been a sport. You've been a sport.
I have not crapped all over this.
No, and I just think that, I sincerely appreciate this movie being introduced to me by you, Adam. I had never really heard of it. It's one I had seen on the Criterion Channel a few times, just like going by really quickly. I saw the name, but I had no idea what the name was even and how to say it. But I will be checking out the rest of the trilogy. And I do feel that this movie, if you are into a particular recreational substance, man, it's made for that's all. I'm not advised if it's illegal where you are at, but if it's legal, take a little bit of a gummy or take a little toke of something, and it's going to take the next level.
That's or in Christina's case, straight vodka.
Yeah, exactly. Vodka and mute.
And mute.
Seriously, this was an awesome conversation. We're going to get into our rating section. Adam, you know how Letterboxd works. 5 stars. Half stars are allowed. We're going to give Christina the floor first to give her rating. We're going to build up here.
Okay, this was definitely an interesting watch. Like I said, the first 30 minutes, I gave it the good college try and watched it on normal speed and sound was on. The score, I could not stand. Literally, like it was painful to watch. This was almost nauseating to watch. But once I stopped listening to it and just watched it, the visuals really are breathtaking. They really show you a lot of interesting things. And there are a lot of times I was like, I never like thought of it that way. Like the very first, I think the movie starts out with like a lot of backwards slow-mo. And then we got to the first time lapse. It was like lights turning on and off on buildings. And there were some lights that never turned off. And I was like, you know, I wonder if people are living there, if it's an office. It was just like, it introduces you to how people live and how different we are or how busy we are. I really loved a lot of the traffic patterns. So my interpretation of this movie was just humans are just in the hustle and bustle. You know, we're all trying to get to our next location. We're all walking quickly through the streets. We're all running to get on the subway. We're all getting off of this train and going to the next one. We're working all of the time. We're rushing through our jobs. Everything is a rush. And once we got back to the nature, it kind of was like, maybe we need to slow down. That was my interpretation that I took from watching this. I don't need to ever watch it again, but I did enjoy it more than Blade Runner. And last week I gave Blade Runner a whopping 1, and I'm going to give this movie a 2 out of 5. Which I think is as generous as I can get.
I'm shocked that it was a 2. When I watched this movie, when I finished, after I got through my own thoughts on the movie, I was like, Christina, I did. I messaged Christina. I said, Christina, you really don't even have to show up this week. Like, I loved the movie. And I was like, I was really afraid that she was going to literally say this is stock footage with terrible music, which she stopped short of saying that. She didn't say it was stock footage.
Well, they did use some stock footage because I read that.
Yeah, for me, this movie is a 4 out of 5. I thought that the imagery was really breathtaking. There are shots that reminded me of 2001. I also had the shots that it really reminded me of the beginning of The Shining also. I just really felt similar to that, like over the mountains and just like kind of the sweeping. And it just, it put me I really like being put into these kind of head spaces. I like being thought about my insignificant spot in the universe and how small I am and how just everybody kind of goes through their lives not questioning any aspect of it till the very end. And then they have so many questions, but it's too late. And just like, I don't know. I just thought the trust of this movie and one person's pretension is another person's art. I don't believe art can really ever be too pretentious. That, like, to me, that just means the filmmaker really is trying to make something unique. And I do think that it was achieved here. And this movie without the music that was used would be a different movie without the imagery. It was the way it was supposed to be for me. And it's not quite a 5 out of 5, but I mean, 4 out of 5 is really solid. I have not seen anything like it. So thank you very much for that.
Oh, my pleasure. I loved making it too. No, I honestly, this one's a 4.5 out of 5 for me because it's lived with me a long time. You know, I've revisited it many times and it always resonates. I don't quite have like an emotional reaction to it the way I do to certain films. So maybe that's what keeps me from going all the way to 5 stars the way I am, for example, with a couple of Herzog's nonfiction films like that really hit me in my gut. But it's up there. And I think if people haven't seen it, they're doing themselves a disservice. I think everyone should try and see this at least once, even if, you know, like experimental films are not normally something that you would gravitate towards. I think even though Christina rated it lower, she and Aaron were making the same points. And I think that speaks to the film's success about what it's trying to convey.
Yeah, really well said. So that gets us an average rating of, I'm very happy to say, it's 3.5. Yeah, I think that's a solid rating. It beats the Blair Witch line, as I call it. It's like the Mendoza line in baseball, but for digesting cinema. If you can get above the rating on Blair Witch Project, then you're doing all right. Even though I loved Blair Witch Project after I watched it. But 3.5 for Koyaanisqatsi. I definitely do recommend this to everybody, and all reactions are valid. Christina, you are a complete sport with this. 18 episodes ago, I think if we would have started with this movie, I just wonder if we would have even, you know, had the discussion. I do feel that over these 18 episodes, I can speak for myself, I've been able to develop a lot more of my ability to take in different kinds of films I never thought I'd be into. And while I did think this would be one I'd be into if I was introduced to it, I do appreciate your flexibility with it. So
I'm a professional. So
yeah,
I'm
you are the pro.
I do have a question. I don't want to get off topic too much, but didn't you finally see Satan Tango, Aaron?
Oh yeah, hell yeah.
Okay, did you do an episode on that?
Not yet, no.
Okay, and I know Christina will never get through that. Did you tell her about it?
No.
Okay, so Christina, how do you feel about watching an 8-hour black and white Hungarian film?
I have a life, guys. I don't have time for an 8-hour movie. Things are opening up in New Jersey. The weather's been nice.
We'll get back to that one.
Yeah. We'll save that for season two.
If you can get Bibbs or Whitney on here, they both like it. So.
Oh my God. I've already
split into Bibbs' DMs. He has not replied.
Yeah. Maybe after he hears our Blade Runner episode, he will. Yeah.
I'll be like, I need to come on and let this girl know what's up.
Like, after he hears this episode, I think.
Yeah, if this encourages one person to watch this movie, I'm very happy, because that person will encourage another person and the cult will continue thanks to Christina. We're going into episode 19 next week. It is movies that are under $1 million. So we're back to just Christina and I for the next couple weeks. We need a little alone time.
We are traveling a little bit these upcoming weekends, so it's a little bit easier to schedule when it's just the two of us.
Like I said, a long time. But yeah, under $1 million is the subject for next week. Adam, do you have any movies that kind of stuck out to you from this? Otherwise, Christina and I will come up with a few and then we'll make a decision between the three of us of what we cover for next week.
Films under $1 million?
Yep.
Well, to come up with ones that are good.
No Asylum films will be needed for this.
Okay, you guys go first. Let me jog my memory.
So no problem. I will mention a few that are on my list. First off, it is one I've seen before, but it's one that I have to make sure that Christina has seen. It's one of my favorite movies of the last 10 years, in all honesty. It's Destin Daniel Cretton's Short Term 12. This movie is extraordinary. Have you seen this, Christina?
No.
Oh my God.
I don't even know what this movie is. And let's be real. I'm going to pick something that's not going to make me hate my life, which has been the last 3 weeks of this.
Well, allow me to read the synopsis for Short Term 12. You are a teacher. You take care of youth. I think this movie kind of is right up your alley, but it's about Grace, a compassionate young supervisor at a foster care facility, helps at-risk teens, but when a new charge dredges upon memories of her own troubled past, Grace's tough exterior begins to slide. So it's all about basically a social worker in a short-term facility working with kids. It's early Keith Stanfield in it, but he goes as Keith Stanfield in it. It's got Brie Larson, Caitlin Decker. It is an absolutely heartwarming movie. It's one of literally the best movies of the last 10 years, and not a movie where you're going to be confused or having to mute the score or anything. I mean, it's just
I wasn't confused. I just didn't like the music.
Well, the music's much more soothing. Adam, have you seen Short Term 12?
No, but that is on my short term list. I will be seeing it very soon because it's streaming on Prime, right? That will be seen by me in the foreseeable future.
Go ahead, Adam, and then we'll have Christina finish us off here.
All right. I don't think Christina is going to go anywhere near my three. First and foremost, Eraserhead. I mean, come on. Eraserhead is one of the most important films ever made for under $1 million. Have you seen it yet?
Oh, no. Of course I have.
David Lynch is a slice, Christina. Come on. You got to get to work. You got to watch yourself some Eraserhead. And then Trey Edward Schultz's first film, Krisha, is fantastic, starring Krisha Fairchild in the main role. But that movie, it's like, I say it's my favorite Thanksgiving movie. It takes place at Thanksgiving. And it's so understated. And that is her movie from the perspective of this older woman who's been ostracized from her own family for years, trying to get through a Thanksgiving and like going into the bathroom and like trying to cope with wine and stuff. It's a great movie. And then the horror movie Kill List, which has no chance.
Ben Wheatley is not going to make an appearance.
I don't like scary movies. I just don't enjoy being scared. This is not for me. And it's also not, you know, a surprise to anyone that I don't like horror. We all watched my abysmal showdown match. So I don't like watching these movies.
Well, Kill List is a hoot. I think you'd like that one.
I have those three. I would say Krisha has the best chance at Christina saying no to, but still maybe. Christina, what are your selections? I have a feeling we're going to go with one of yours this week.
Have never seen the first Mad Max, so I will throw that out there.
Okay.
And then just because I like them together, Favreau and Vince Vaughn together for Swingers, what I think would be fun. And just because I want to cheat and do an extra Hitchcock film. Technically, I've seen it, but I watched it for the first time in quarantine. So I feel like it still counts. Psycho was under $1 million.
Psycho. All right. So
okay. Those are all solid.
Yeah. Psycho is my cheating pick, though, since Alfred Hitchcock is an eventual topic. This is just a way that we can do a Hitchcock again. So it's
yeah, there's so much Hitchcock to choose from, though. I will say, let's lighten it up this week for me. We all need a drink after that existential. let's swing for the fences with Swingers. John Favreau and Vince.
That's a good movie.
Yeah, I think that Christina deserves a little bit of fun. We need to take her out on a night out in town after our meditation retreat to Koyaanisqatsi. She needs a drink. So Swingers, that works for all of us. I have not seen it. Christina has not seen it. It looks like a good time, though. And I'm excited to see the aspects of it that have aged like shit. Because like, you know, there's going to be like Harvey Weinstein aspect or something to this movie where you're just like, you can't do that in a movie anymore. Like, I can't wait. Adam, have you seen Swingers?
Yeah, I saw it for the first time about a year and a half ago. And that was better late than never, but it was a lot of fun. And I think that's one of Doug Liman's only movies he did where he shot it too, which is really interesting. So he shot the film, which gives it just such an energy, which you'll see when you watch it. Great movie.
I'm really excited because I just don't know a lot about it. And I'm not going to know a lot until we dive
into it. I'll say no more.
Yeah, exactly. No spoilers. But tune in next week. Adam, before we sign off for today, is there anything that's coming up this week for you or coming up that you want? I know you got the horror free-for-all coming up soon.
Yeah, well, I would love for it to be another free-for-all. But it's a
three-way.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of it's a triple threat between myself, Video Drew, and William the Beast Bibbiani to decide who is the current top dog in horror. But what's really exciting is that The Walking Dead and Invincible creator Robert Kirkman is calling the match with Ellis. So that is pretty neat. So that'll be premiering during the Skybound Expo on May 14th. And then I have an upcoming teams match with my partner, Lady Justice Marisol McKee, as the team Deception. We are going up against fan league favorite Jacoby Bancroft and Janine the Machine Blackjack. So that's going to be a good match. Tune into that next week on May 6th.
That will be the most emotional I'll ever get for, I think, a throwdown match, to be honest, because
they had to make me and Jacoby play each other. I just didn't realize they'd do it this quick.
I'm really like, that one is like going to be hard to watch. And that horror three ways, like three of my favorite people in the Schmodown also, if I'm being honest. So I'm looking forward to both those things. Big things continuing to happen for Adam. I'm so happy that we could have you on. Thank you so much for making
my pleasure. Time.
And having a movie that like, it just... The conversation about why Adam has chose this for the last like month or so has been almost as fascinating as the movie itself, because it's just like you seek this out immediately. You're like, documentaries, Koyaanisqatsi. And I'm just like, I love you for it. There's only one Adam Collins in this world, and he was not going to give up away any strength with his choice. He was like, I'll just choose this random Reggio documentary. Christina, is there anything coming up this week for you?
May the 4th be with all of you guys. You will get to hear my thoughts as I watch Star Wars for the very first time, listening to our spinoff series, Digesting the Force. So that will be coming out on May 4th. And then every Friday after that until we are done. And we have a slew of Star Wars experts and super fans joining us to help me through this, because I have so many questions, because I am going into this as blind as possible to get the full Star Wars experience.
Yeah, like some people say they don't know about movies and they have like tangential ideas. Christina knows nothing about this. When we started recording the first episode, she asked if there's always words that come across before the movie starts, asking about The Crawl. Like, she didn't even know about The Crawl. So this is...
Christina, can you stand subtitles when you're watching like an English-speaking movie? Because like...
Yeah, I like to actually watch the subtitles.
Definitely put them on if this is your first time. And then I'll get you ready for your Star Wars Division debut after that.
I mean, yeah, what? I want to be 60 days, right? Isn't that the rule?
Watch these movies and we'll get you ready. But watch Clone Wars twice. She's going to watch the Clone Wars movie, right?
No, we are not doing Clone Wars.
You're getting off easy. No Clone Wars, no Ewok movies?
No Ewok movies. Right. That might be a special
spot. Bring me back for the Ewok movies.
You got it. We have no requests for that. And so find Christina at Christina, VEE19 on underscore VEE19 on Twitter. I'm at Aaron, J-A-Y, Brooks on Twitter. For Aaron, for Christina, for Adam. Keep digesting cinema and keep finding your own Koyaanisqatsi.